Hello, everybody. Mark Carlson here, SNEA Technical Council Co-Chair. Welcome to the SDC Podcast. Every week, the SDC Podcast presents important technical topics to the storage developer community. Each episode is hand-selected by the SNEA Technical Council from the presentations at our annual Storage Developer Conference. The link to the slides is available in the show notes at snea.org/podcasts. You are listening to SDC Podcast, Episode 61.
So I'm Mark Carlson. I work for Toshiba, and I'm presenting this on behalf of the NVM programming twig, which is working on this new cool stuff I want to tell you about. So we'll talk about some of the persistent memory technology briefly. I'm sure you've got a lot of it in this room all week. And briefly cover the NVM programming model. Tom Kalpi did a really good job on that yesterday here, so maybe a slide or two. I'm not going to talk about NVDIMMs other than how do you secure them. And then we'll get into persistent memory security and a threat model that we've been working on and collaborating with the Trusted Computing Group's PMEM working group on. The main issue is, at this point, if you have an NVDIMM, you got to shred it when it leaves your data center. That's the model that we're going by. If we can keep those NVDIMMs from being shredded on exit to the data center, then they'll start to be more confidence in adopting them overall, and we won't have to do strange things. So, persistent memory, it's a type of non-volatile memory, and the NVM programming model talks about persistent memory media and distinguishes it from a persistent memory access or a byte access, right? So, the media itself of persistent memory is a small circle within a larger NVM circle. And so what we're talking about is NVM, all NVM technologies. You could have a DRAM in front of NAND, and that would be it's a byte-accessible persistent memory, but it's not persistent memory media. Does that make sense? So persistent RAM disks appears as a disk to applications, and its access is traditionally blocks. You don't have to rewrite your application to use persistent memory if you look at it like a disk. And that's how NAND got started, right? Is they made it into a disk. It looks like a disk, and all the software just sort of works with it a lot faster. And so that's going to happen with persistent memory as well. And then there's memory-like non-volatile memory. and that you do access in a byte-accessible mode. And the application is stored directly in the byte-addressable memory. There's no I/O or even DMA required. So we focus on persistent memory with memory kind of access, byte-addressable. Okay? That's the most difficult thing to secure. So the programming model you've heard about this week, NVM.PM.Volume mode is your disk, looks like a disk, but it's a software abstraction, and it's really landing in persistent memory. And things like address ranges and thin provisioning management you want to support. And then there's the NVM PM file mode, and this is a PM aware file system that is able to take advantage of the fact that you don't have to do I/O for files anymore. So, on persistent memory security work in the NVM programming model, we want to discover any gaps in the existing technologies related to PM security, and the shredding of NVDIMMs is a big gap. But there's others. And so we're working on this threat model, and we want to suggest some requirements that could resolve some of those gaps if we did things differently, right? If we had self-encrypting NVDIMMs, maybe you wouldn't have to shred them. So we've established an alliance with the Trusted Computing Group, and it's a relationship between the two groups where SNIA provides the application user level roles, behaviors, and threat models, and the TCG provides the actual solution. And then the TCG are also approaching JEDEC. John, you're still working on that, right? Okay. So JEDEC provides those NVDIMM specifications. If there's some changes that we need to do to implement some of these security features, the interface might need change as well. How do you manage NVDIMMs today, right? How are you going to get a secure key down into a NVDIMM? Right? Or how do you tell it to encrypt all the memory accesses that are coming in? So those are the kind of things that we need to think about. Questions so far? Okay. So many aspects of security are actually unchanged by persistent memory, right? Administrative security isn't changed. Key management external to the device isn't changed. Memory protection isn't changed. Memory mapping isn't changed, right? So the first order requirement I just said is, can we encrypt the data at rest in an NVDIMM or other persistent memory device? So when you authenticate or re-authenticate, you want to be able to trigger some operation inside. Real-time encryption, is that even possible? Is it just make these things too expensive? And then there's this whole continuity of principal identity, right? If I'm the one that stuck the data into this NVDIMM, and that NVDIMM ends up in a different system, how does the new user of it authenticate to my data, right? I mean, you really need, if you're going to do this, you have to sort of think about those kind of things, because the whole idea of a removable persistent memory component is that if the rest of the system dies, your data is still there, right? It's portable now. I can take it and put it in a new system and should be able to come back with all of the features that I have. Okay? So the protection granularity is important too, and especially at the file and volume layers, right? So if my persistent memory is showing up as a virtual disk or partition or device, that's the thing that you want to encrypt at rest, right, on that level of granularity. But if you have a persistent memory aware file system, now you've got memory map files, and that is the granularity at which you may want to do some of these security features. And then achieving isolation analogous to external storage. So maybe you have a limited access enablement window where it's available over, you know, you have to make it available to the operating system via a secure mechanism. And then how do you rapidly transition your privileges or escalate permissions? The employee that put their data on the NVDIMM has left the company, you don't know how it was secured, but you need his data. So one of the things that we sort of focused on is this isn't really going to be a very big market unless, you know, the cloud guys adopt it, right? Hyperscalers adopt it. They start charging you for a virtual machine that has persistent memory under it, right? And they can charge you more, yeah? But you're going to pay it because it's so much faster, right? So how do you establish trust in a cloud environment, in a multi-tenant environment with these NVDIMMs, right, with persistent memory? I want a machine with a gigabyte of persistent memory. What is the cloud provider going to do with my data when I'm no longer running that machine? Is it still in the persistent memory? Did he stage it off to an SSD? Or what, right? Or is it sitting out in a hard drive? So we wanna speak to this multi-tenancy hardware support. what features in the NVDIMM would be required for multi-tenancy cloud use, right? Or even internal private cloud use still in a virtualized environment. So both of these hopefully can be addressed by the encryption at rest solution we come up with, and think about the issues that we discussed on the prior two slides. So here we have a cloud customer, and we have a cloud data center infrastructure, right? And there's a little key down here that says this cloud infrastructure is insecure, right? Because you got multiple people running in it. There's some security mechanism that secures this insecure environment for this customer. And then there's the customer secured pieces as well. So that's the thing. So the cloud data centers are not necessarily trusted by the customers, right? Their competitors could have their stuff running in that same cloud, right? So customer establishes an account. He becomes a tenant. He's running an application in an isolated container or VM. And now that application securely mounts some piece of storage. Persistent memory that is isolated, hopefully, from other clients in that cloud, right? And then the customer manages and uses keys to secure his own use of all of that. And typically that would be an external key manager. And here, the customer's keys are in a piece of customer-managed infrastructure, so he trusts it, right? There's other scenarios where the cloud provider is providing the key management, but that it has its own issues. We didn't go there. So persistent management clone use case, and this is you want to boot a machine, but you want to boot it from a golden Linux image, right? So you have this boot image here that you want to make actually immutable. You don't want anybody going in and changing the gold Linux image for every customer, right? So basically what you want to do is to instantiate your app, you actually do a copy on write to the machine that's running there, and at that point it can change because it's running now. But this never changes, right? So the PM boot image is this trusted gold standards. It's immutable. And then the tenant runs in clones of that boot image, and writes only happen over here. They don't happen over here. And then you can add additional security features such as digital signature. You sign this image, right? A lot of them do. And before you trust it to run in your cloud, you verify that signature. Immutability is ensured by the cloud provider, enforced by features of the iOS of the operating system and the memory controller, and perhaps maybe even the NVDIMM. The storage access is authorized based on the customer-provided keys that we talked about on the last image. So it's mounted after the image creations and then becomes part of that tenant environment. Questions so far? Okay. So what are the features of a multi-tenant infrastructure? You have this isolated execution environment for customer applications. The customer provides a key to enable the execution. And you may have many execution environments per customer, right? The whole idea is you can scale these things out to address the needs of your own customers, right? So the access to cloud storage is already secured. Customer provides a key to access those files and objects. Typically, it's like an X509 certificate in most of these interfaces. And again, where you store your data in the cloud storage also has many different locations, or buckets, some of these interfaces call it. And then per tenant, you have a storage volume or partition. And you want to be able to enable the secure erase of the deleted data. So we're talking about something on the order of 10 keys per drive, maybe. I don't know. Depends on how big the drive is. So both persistent and non-persistent storage usage has to be taken into account. And then the storage partitions themselves are not necessarily attaining cloud scale. You don't need access by thousands of machines usually. So if you think about what's on the disk, it actually has there's two classes of tenants. One is a tenant who relies on the security and the granularity of the cloud provider to secure each little piece of data, right? The other is tenants who achieve data security using the provider-supported hardware secure arrays features. That ends up into a partition tenant mapping here that then gets laid out on different pieces of storage or persistent memory. So as far as this is concerned, these are all shared amongst the different tenants, and it's only other infrastructure above the actual storage persistent memory thing that actually gives you security and the granularity. Now, if you're trusting on the NVDIMM to provide the actual security features and hardware, then it's a different partition mapping. Questions on this? Okay. So key management is necessary. The secure key management techniques applied, including the use of key encryption keys, which is a keychain kind of technology. And then any retention of the unencrypted data that's in the process of being encrypted or scheduled for the same must be guaranteed to be unrecoverable after any event that can compromise security, such as power loss, reset, or component renewal. But this is the same thing we've been doing for disk drives for years, right? SSDs, right? But it's a different interface now. You're talking about byte addressable on the memory bus. So there's standards out there already. OASIS KMIP is a key management interoperability protocol, I believe.
Have you seen a single memory bus that's actually byte addressable?
When it actually gets out to the device, I have to use Andy's flush command. the other thing is auditing. It's great to say this, but unless you provide the right features of an event, a security event, there's no place to log it, right? So part of this is actually logging the security operations that are done on the actual NVDIMM itself and providing the hooks so that you can find out who accessed what part of the NVDIMM when, right? And who gave them permission and those kind of things, right? Other considerations include the code origin and delivery protection. I mentioned the signing of the images, but maybe you also sign any other piece of thing that you want to trust. So obviously executable, but there's also non-repudiation, which means you know definitely it came from your boss. And it's not a spoof email that's trying to get you to download malware or something, right? So that's non-repudiation, but it also uses encryption. Now, on the subject of memory protection is primarily an OS process-centric idea. One can view those virtual machines as processes run on hypervisors. Containers, they are what?
They are.
Yeah. All applications run in one or more processes. Memory management units enforce memory protection using both virtual address space mapping and physical address protection. And details of both of those are dependent upon which MMU you're running. So what are the security implications of that as well? So you can see we're sort of just exploring all these different use cases, understanding what the requirements are, so that we can work with the TCG group and the JEDEC group to come up with some solutions here pretty soon. And it's all part of the NVM programming model for sure. So we have a threat model, and to introduce you to that, we've come up with different roles to use in describing the threat model. So we have a term called customer. This is the security principal or data owner, person or organization. So that's the customer. There's a developer, which might be a storage application developer, DevOps, whatever. He's using the libraries and so forth. And then there's a security officer, right? Not only assigning rights, but running the audits and engaging external auditing companies and so forth. And then there's an administrator, the guy that does system configuration manager. And the reason we say that's insecure is because he doesn't own the data. He's responsible to manage the infrastructure, but he shouldn't have access to the data. And then there's, you know, deliverers and repairers and factory channel support and supply chain. And I want to be able to send these NVDIMMs back to the manufacturer if they fail. I want to be able to sell them on eBay. Okay? So threat model is a bit of an eye chart, but we have kind of a category of attack, and we'll show those. Within, let's say, cross-tenant, there's aspects like privacy and confidentiality, integrity, availability, denial of service attacks, for example. So then we say, who's the attacker? And remember, the previous slide had the roles. So in the cross-tenant privacy confidentiality threat, the attacker would be a tenant administrator or a repairer. And the approach that we take, sorry, this is all white text. This is applicable existing approach and new issues with persistent memory, right? So if we say none here, we haven't identified any holes, if you will, that persistent memory has opened up, okay? But we want to still document those so that at least it shows that we consider it, right? So traditional authorization, authentication, encryption at rest, separation of roles, and memory protection are all in this cross-tenant privacy and confidentiality. The OS, the hypervisor, takes pretty much care of those already. Persistent memory doesn't create any new issues in those things. Integrity, cross-tenant integrity, developer-tenant administrators. The existing approach is traditional authorization, authentication, the separation of roles, and the memory protection. Now, there is, in the persistent memory case, an increased scope of damage due to mismanaged pointers, memory resources, and so forth. If I say in my persistent memory, I save a pointer. How long is that pointer good for? Not very long, but it's persistent now. It doesn't go away when the machine dies. availability, denial of service, both to the tenant and the developer. In order to do availability, you sign a contract with the cloud provider, perhaps. The per-tenant quality of service that is existing might be disrupted by a potential for rapid disruption with limited detection window in the persistent memory case. In the cross-tenant, that doesn't make sense. I think that's a bug. But applicable existing approach is secure erasure, physical or cryptographic during deletion, and more rapid free space recycling in memory rather than disk, right? Because you're gonna move stuff in and out of persistent memory quite often. Either, especially as you initially put these things in, it's going to be a small piece of persistent memory that accelerates the rest of the stuff. It's very expensive per byte. So then there's a category called insider, should be obvious. Local hardware attacks, like from a DMA engine perhaps. And for memory protection and per tenant quality of service applied to IO, we're starting to think about this. We haven't said there's no issues, but we haven't identified any specific ones. RDMA. Is RDMA a threat to persistent memory, right? If you're RDMAing into here, how is that secure? And there are ways to secure RDMA, but it's not a matter of protecting the data that's going in so much as who put it in there. How did they have permission to put it in there, right? So if you're doing persistent memory over fabrics, what's the security threat model around that, right? So we're thinking about that as well. And then there's malware, right? Insider delivers malware into the system. Digital signing, virus protection are already there. I don't think persistent memory adds anything or opens up any holes. And then, you know, access by admin and support, getting in there and see their tenant's data. And how do you actually assure their customers that your administrators can't see their data? All right, so that's where we've gotten so far. We're working on a white paper, and it will detail all of this. We did an earlier draft that just had that threat model in it and sent it over to TCG. So we'll be updating that. We have a new version. We didn't get it out publicly in time for this conference yet. But we'll, in the next week or two, we'll probably have it out there. So how do you control the security features of persistent memories and NVDIMMs? Is, for example, there an area of that NVDIMM that's reserved for the control? Now, this wouldn't require JEDEC to do anything, right? We just say this little piece of memory is the sort of hypervisor-supervisor area of memory. The tenants don't get to write to it. But you go in and write to this reserved area. That gives you the, you know, assign this granularity, map that granularity. This tenant has access to that, and this other tenant doesn't. So that's one possible thing that we might work on with TCG around. What about ioctl support? For supporting a root of trust, you'd have to reestablish that root of trust on a power event, reset, hot plug, and heartbeat loss. And then another idea is shadowing of a volatile area, DRAM, with persistent memory backing store. So maybe your DRAM, the app's writing in clear, right? But when you send it off to the NAND in the DIMM, it becomes encrypted.
By the way, on AMD, there's actually really nice memory encryption scheme now that they support for virtual machines. Very interesting.
That's a CPU. You have to support it in a CPU. Yeah, then you have to put it in the memory controller. And if you can do that at memory speeds, that's pretty good.
They do.
Yeah. Is that the Ryzen?
Well, the whole family.
Yeah.
No, we just have to standardize memory controller.
So yes, we're still working on this. It's not done yet. We're looking for input. If you have feedback, send us a feedback. But we really want to rally the industry around this NIA view of persistent memory. People are starting to use it in NVMe now, with some of the TPARs that are coming forward and mentioning that. So we have application-centric, vendor-neutral, it's achievable today, and it goes beyond just storage. Applications, memory, networking, processors all need to think about how they are affected by persistent memory. Like we had this panel this morning, right? How are the fabrics going to be affected? How are the SSDs going to be affected by persistent memory? NVMe just approved, I think, persistent memory regions, and that'll see some more features over the next few months. And actually, this it's not up there yet, but that's where it will land when we finally publicize it. The programming model, the latest programming models, version 1.2, I encourage you to go download it, read it, understand it. Go get the slides from Andy's talk as well. All right. Ooh, we're doing good for the pool. So you guys aren't very interactive. So anybody have any questions or comments?
Let's get onto the drinks then. Yeah.
Can you go back to the table?
Sure. There's three slides at table.
What is the scope of what you guys are doing?
Right, but what's the security model for memory? Volatile memory.
So you should drop persistent from
the title. No, but there's features when memory becomes persistent that now, nobody shreds their DRAM chips when they leave the data center, do they?
They're forgettable.
I'm just saying that a lot of the things you're talking about here.
If that was truly the case, we'd have none down all the columns.
No, it's not all of them. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
You've listed and go to the next slide in the next.
If it's blank, if it's blank, that means we can't agree that it's none. Maybe we just haven't found one yet.
This is exercise left to the reader, I see.
No, it's between the groups that are working on this stuff, right? We send this over the wall to TCG. They say, no way, you forgot about this. Yeah.
Not much about it, but knowing a lot about SED and FDE, will we have an equivalent for the solid state devices?
Yes, screw arrays.
Just protect a limited amount. It's only for device portability that it's any good.
Yeah, you can secure erase a single namespace in NVMe.
Are those programs underway?
I don't know. Is it supported in Linux? Secure erase of a single namespace?
Well, it's supported. The device does it, right? I mean, if you look at NVMe, well, we've got the newer secure erase, which is always the whole subsystem, but we've also got the secure, what do we call it, delete? What's the name? Well, anyways, if you do the Foreman NVM, you can do the secure. Now, it's actually called secure erase. But it really depends on your device. And NVMe is this really weird command where there's a couple of bits in identify that tell you, is it going to erase a single namespace or is it going to erase all of it, even if you specify the namespace ID? So someone's really on crack with designing that. And you can't use it from...
He's right over there.
Fundamentally odd when you're dealing with NAND and its erase structures and moving things in the background because we don't really control what's used.
No. That's not the problem. That's very understandable. The problem with NVMe is...
No, I understand that. I'm getting there. And when you have configurable namespaces and you have different areas of the device, sometimes you can build architectures which separate that. But it's more typical that you don't because then you get the best square leveling, we can get the best performance. There's trade-offs. So it's easier if we sanitize the whole device and you know what you're getting from your sanitizer. We can guarantee it.
No, it absolutely is. I mean, the point is, if you look at Foreman NVM, the one option, the most common one, isn't even an erase. It's a crypto erase. You just throw away a key, not the data. But the point is, the interface as designed in NVMe is the worst possible one. Any sane person would say, there's a Foreman namespace that's an optional command and a Foreman subsystem. Not one command that always takes namespace ID and sometimes ignores it.
Well, it's generally acknowledged that the higher you go in the hierarchy, the better off you are.
Yeah.
So if you can move from the device level, that FDE provided, for example, you can move up to the subsystem layer and do it the storage controller,
okay.
You're a lot better off, like the example with the StoreWise software base.
Sure.
If you can move up to the OS level, like ZOS encryption facility, you're even better because now you're protected in flight. If you move up to source data creation at the top of the hierarchy, you're actually at the best level, but there's other issues involved. None of these are freebies, by the way. We have found out that there's a price to pay at each level, obviously.
But when you're talking in data rest and leaving stuff behind, which is what happens with the crypto scramble, everybody with their quantum computer can break that stuff. So sometimes you actually do want to do block erases, you want to do overwrites, stuff like that. And to do that well, you need to do it all, or you don't really know that you've done it.
So if I have a FIPS 140-2 certified operating system level encryption capability built into my OS, you're saying that's easily, anyone can crash that?
There's a reason that there's a post-quantum NIST process in place right now to figure out how to do encryption once you know about quantum computing.
You better be careful. You better warn a lot of people sleep tonight.
Sorry. So it goes. By the way, Trump has nothing to do with it.
All right. So the
I don't know that you can spell FIPS.
So Eden's talking.
Did you look at the ciphers? What kind of ciphers would be relevant for bytes?
Yeah. SNIA already has a really good handle on the security ciphers to use. We have a TLS spec, which actually scopes TLS down into only a handful of cipher suites that are used in that. So I imagine that we would recommend similar kind of cipher suites as well for this. You know, TLS is specified all these AES, 256, you know.
Yeah. I understand. For example, the common one for NVMe, for SSDs, is AES-XDS, which is built upon a sector-level encryption.
Yeah.
Now it's not a sector, right? You can modify one byte.
Well, that's the other way around, right? AES does 120 bits. We had to do something special.
But if you want to do a byte, the cache line is even the encryption block size, because if you look at the OS memory management, well, it's mostly page size based. So it would be really nice round number to use per K as your encryption block.
Another fun side of that is latency. So if you're going to have some inline encryption, you don't want to have 6 million gates to deal with that. You have a limitation by how big you can make it.
I like that. I like to require that the memory has 4 gate encryption units.
The other thing about cache line sizes is cache line sizes aren't the same everywhere. There's power systems out there that have 128-byte cache lines. There are ARM systems that have 32-byte cache lines, even if they're unusual. Most of them are 64. So cache line size is not a standardized value, right? So you need to build. So your crypto needs to think of the idea that your media might be moving between systems with different cache lines.
But as long as there are multiple of 128 bits, you're kind of okay.
So one thing that's different is when you move something in the block space, stuff sort of moves. And you expect it to move, and it goes from some either one nice collection of 0 to n, or several nice collections of 0 to n. But in the NVDIMM memory mode, it's just different. And that's where the at-rest stuff is kind of interesting, because when you're moving in NVDIMM, you probably don't want to move the contents, period.
Well, I don't see why everyone's so focused on NVDIMMs. I mean, to be honest, a storage like Symantec on a parallel memory bus that is synchronous is freaking stupid. So initially we'll see things like NVMe TMR, because that reduces PCIe. Eventually we'll move to asynchronous operations on memory bus. JEDEC is already working on that. Eventually, not too soon, we'll move to serial memory connections, because the parallel bus just isn't on scale with data rates. So I don't think people should be worried too much about the traditional.
memory serial out of memory?
Huh? It's rescaling to be parallel with the high-speed serials.
So we've seen persistent memory media show up in block device, right? That's where Optane lives, or 3D Trust Point, right?
But, I mean, the whole point is people are trying to play up this whole, it's like, is it persistent memory in an NVDIMM, or is it an NVMe PCIe device? But there's a lot more factors in there. I mean, one is your cache line or block size. It's what are you transferring? So there's 64K, 64 bytes, 512, 4K, anything in between.
But if you put in an NVMe device, all those issues go away. It's an NVMe device, right?
No, but I mean, I could build a cache controller right now that does loads and stores in NVMe devices. It's
sure.
All about the cache controller, right?
Yeah.
So it doesn't really matter how your bus connection is looking like. It's a programming model.
Well, it's actually, you could, but fundamentally, memory generally doesn't have a driver.
It has now with persistent memory. Look at how much proper code we have to drive NVMe's. Those days are over. Look at Gen Z.
We'll end up hopefully removing a lot of that stuff.
Guys, we just move it up to the OS level.
Yeah.
The whole discussion's irrelevant. Right?
You're still shredding NVDIMMs. And perhaps NVMe devices with persistent media in them before they leave
the other advantage we get is, you know, there's a lot of interest in key shredding, and we have customers that have done it thousands of times and continue to do it dozens of times every day. And the reason that's of such interest is, number one, you don't want to leave stuff behind. Number two, if you have an intrusion detection, you've got to shut the door real quick. And it's a lot quicker to shred keys than it is to overwrite devices, right? So one of the advantages of moving up the hierarchy and getting to the OS level is I can shred the keys in nanoseconds. Okay? And if I can shred the master keys at that level, man, I'm doing the rest. This is an interesting discussion, don't get me wrong. Okay. But it doesn't matter after that, right?
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
But that's really the problem. With the crypto scramble that we get, unfortunately, it'll take you microseconds.
Okay, any other discussion questions? Sorry for the folks on the video podcast when it comes out. We just had a long interactive discussion without microphones. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for listening. If you have questions about the material presented in this podcast, be sure and join our developers mailing list by sending an email to developers-subscribe@snea.org. Here you can ask questions and discuss this topic further with your peers in the storage developer community. For additional information about the Storage Developer Conference, visit www.storagedeveloper.org.